Welcome to Career Tools. This week, the high I in DISC and teamwork weaknesses, part two. The questions this cast answers are, as a high I, how might I be hurting my relationship with my team? As a high I, what behaviors should I stop doing to improve my relationship with my teammates? And as a high I, what behaviors should I start doing to improve my relationships with my teammates?
Has this ever happened to you? You just learned that your newly hired direct is now not showing up next week because they've taken another job. How did it happen? Well, with the hot job market of today, as a hiring manager or HR professional, there's more to hiring than the interview, offer, and acceptance. At Manager Tools, we teach you how to maximize your interviewing effectiveness. We help you find an organizational process with individual responsibilities and how your communication and behavior for the first 180 days is absolutely critical. Let us come on site to your organization to deliver our effective hiring manager training. Contact Maggie at customerservice@manager-tools.com to learn more.
Sarah, last week we asked our high eyes to focus their efforts, and I'm curious now as to how they did and if they found themselves surprised about how many tangents they go off on. This week, we have four more things for them to do. So we're going to start with meeting deadlines and following through on tasks.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So high eyes, do what you said you were going to do when you said you were going to do it. This is probably the simplest instruction we could possibly give you, but somehow, between your focus on people over tasks and your belief that you can bend the environment to your will, it is the hardest thing for the high eyes to carry out. Not only do we find high eyes miss deadlines and not follow through on tasks, it appears to other people that high eyes also don't care about the fact that they haven't met their deadlines or carried out any of those tasks. In fact, high eyes, let's admit it, you actually don't. Like, I mean, does it really matter that I met the deadline, that I did that exact thing? Either the task is really insignificant or there is more important things to do.
Yeah.
All work happens on a spectrum.
But here's a different way to think about it. This classic high eye behavior of missing deadlines and forgetting your commitments harms your relationship with every one of the other profiles. Every time you miss a deadline with one of them, it is like slapping them in the face, quite literally, because they think differently about deadlines and commitments than you do.
Mm-hmm. I would say, Wendy, this is a bit of an interjection, a little bit of a segue, but...
It's all right. They're eyes. We're good.
I know. They can forgive me for it. Thank you, high eyes. Something I've heard often of high eyes when thinking about the work itself, the incremental tasks, the deadlines for those incremental tasks is eyes often feel they've been assigned busy work, busy, unimportant work, because eyes often undervalue those small incremental details. So it's not just the not following through on tasks and the not meeting deadlines for those tasks. It's the feeling that the work you've been asked to do isn't important enough for your time, which again, that plays into this problem with our ability to build good relationships. So at work, the high D thinks of deadlines as the highest form of energy. Deadlines drive everything in the company. The deadline for any given task is the single most important part of that task. So if you would just blow it off, you clearly don't care about what matters to the high D.
And the high C thinks of deadlines as part of the governance of the company. They are as inviolable to her as the laws of state. So when you miss them, she would convene a judge and jury. That's how important they are to her.
Yeah.
So when you miss a deadline, that's what she's thinking. There should be a judge and jury. And you clearly don't care about what matters.
That's exactly it. And for the high S, a deadline is a personal agreement. It's a commitment. It's two honorable professionals shaking hands on a deal. That's sacred. And you would renege on the agreement that the two of you made to one another. Well, if that's true, then you don't care what's important to the high S.
And maybe that sounds like overkill for, oh, I'll get you the report by close of business today, which is a deadline. But that's not. Because whether it's large or small, deadlines and promises to complete tasks, all of the profiles ascribe the same meaning. You are as likely to miss a big deadline as a small one. It doesn't matter whether it's, I'll get you that report by the close of business, or we'll finish this project to build a freeway in 4 years. Either one, you'd miss just as with the same compunction. And that's how they think about deadlines as well. It doesn't matter to our high C whether it's, I'll get you that report, or you miss the freeway deadline. It's still so important that it should have a judge and jury. So that's how they feel. And now, if you think from their point of view about how important these things are, now can you understand why not doing what you say you're going to do gets them so upset or drives a wedge between you? It's just so important to a good working relationship with them.
Mm-hmm. And folks, we know that deadlines sometimes get missed. If you have to be late, just let people know. None of the profiles believe that deadlines cannot and should not be moved for fear of death.
Yeah.
It's just the missing of deadlines without communication that harms the relationship so much. Other people are counting on those deadlines to be met to plan their future work efforts. And while that little deadline might not mean much to you, it's a domino effect, which harms feelings and causes other people to miss their ability to meet their commitments on their deadlines. So it's a cascade of negative effects. But again, you can alleviate the entire concern with communication. Just let people know, hey, I'm not going to be able to meet this deadline. Can we adjust? And most of the profiles, most of the time, will be accepting of your need to adjust.
And part of the reason you miss deadlines is because you don't know when they are. So the next category is pay attention to details, which will help you know when the deadlines are. And the only way to get better at details is to pay attention to them. You have to just go through your day with an intent to be more careful about details. And it sucks.
It does suck.
It just sucks. Like, sorry. But we've got some strategies for you.
Mm-hmm. The first of them is listen more. Listen more and listen carefully. Don't get the main point and then start drifting off in your mind, thinking about something completely unrelated or something that's like tangentially related, but not really related. Instead, stay focused on everything that's said. Listen so closely. It's as if you're going to have to repeat the entire conversation back verbatim after the conversation's been had. Pay attention to all the words from all the people throughout the conversation.
Take notes. Taking handwritten notes helps with listening. And it also helps with remembering, even if you don't have your notes in front of you, which is why you remember what you wanted at the store if you write a list, even if you leave the list at home. It's weird, but it does. Taking notes about the details helps you get the details right. Take the notes, though, with the knowledge that you are going to have to read them again and you are going to use them to remind yourself about the details. Put the decimals in the right place. Put full names next to the actions so that you're sure what they meant when you read them again. You have to write the notes neatly enough so that you can read them again and you can get the details from them accurately. So you have to have that intent when you start writing of, I'm going to need this again. I'm going to go slowly enough that I make it so that future me can read this. Now, a nice notebook and a fancy pen will help you.
It will.
A lot. Or there's some really cool e-ink devices. and everybody will ask you about them because they're that cool. So one of those will help a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Additionally, take more time. Now, we know you want to move about 1,000 miles an hour, but if you slow down, you'll have more time to be careful. Now, here's the good news. Slowing down is not a problem. The high S's and C's won't even notice you've slowed down because you're essentially slowing down to what is their speed. And high D's will appreciate you getting things right the first time and not having to go back and clean them up. So you have more time than you think to get it right, even though you've slowed down.
Okay. Ask questions and ask for help. Two things that you don't want to do. We know asking questions slows you down, so nobody wants to ask questions. But on the other hand, if you think about it, it has a twofold benefit. First, it makes other people feel important, which improves your relationship with them, and you didn't have to do anything. Like, literally, you're asking them a question to get information for them, which is beneficial for you, but it improves your relationship with them because they feel important, and you didn't have to do anything. And then you get the answers you need in order to get the details right. It's like a self-licking ice cream cone. It's like, wow.
Exactly. And ask others who are good at the things that you're not so good at for help. There's no shame in asking a high C to check your work before you send it because you're pretty sure you're struggling to get the details right. Keep three things in mind to make sure that this is relationship building, not relationship destroying. So the first being, tell them you're asking them because they're good at it. Like, for example, Jim, I have to send this spreadsheet up to corporate and I'm pretty sure there are some errors in it that I'm missing. Would you double check it for me? You're the best on our team at catching that kind of thing. Or another thing to consider, keep in mind, is don't be mad when they find errors. They will find errors. Say thank you. Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate you covering for my weaknesses. I'm envious of your accuracy and attention to detail. And then, of course, return the favor. There are things that you're good at that Jim isn't so good at. Offer to help. And then once you've offered to help, follow through. Something to keep in mind, though, high eyes, watch your personal compliments. High eyes, you love giving personal compliments. High eyes, high C's hate getting your personal compliments. And again, you exaggerate, right? So that's, it's a compounding problem. But don't go to Jim and say, oh my gosh, Jim, I totally need your help. You are like the smartest person I know. Please, 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 can you help me? Because the moment those words come out of your mouth, Jim's going to think to himself, you sneaky little. Mm-hmm. And he does not want to help you in that moment. Don't exaggerate. Be matter of fact in your requests for assistance. Say things that are logically accurate. Not, you're the smartest person I know. Rather, you're the best on our team at catching those kinds of things. Logically accurate. Don't embellish.
Yeah, this probably sounds very, very stilted to a high eye. Mm-hmm. And it is to some extent, but it's also aimed at a high C, who is, you're right, that when you say to them, oh, you're the best guy I know, they're just like, yeah. No, that can't logically be true. So now I'm going to discount everything you say.
Everything you say. And I don't want to help you. On top of that, I'm going to do everything in my power to find a way not to help you because I don't know why you're buttering me up.
Exactly.
And I don't trust it. This is actually one of, as Wendy, you know, but audience, you probably know this. We teach these conferences all over the world on communication. That the personal compliments thing is one of the single most, I'm going to say, poignant, compelling, accurate details that we say in person.
Mm-hmm.
Because the high C's
moment
are
when
like,
everyone gets
oh
it.
My gosh. Exactly. It's like crack the world right open kind of moment. It's just like the high C's are like, yes, please stop giving us compliments. And it's so contrary to everything in the fabric of the high I. Because the high I's, let's face it, yo, you're wearing things to entice people to compliment you,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you're wearing like colorful socks or like a fedora on a Tuesday. Like you're wearing things that actually cause other people to walk up to you and say, dude, cool hat.
Yeah.
Like you're doing things to cause people to compliment you. To understand then there are people in the world who do not want to be complimented. It's so contrary as to be almost unbelievable, yeah. But it's true. It is so true.
Yeah. I think that it's for us as D's, it's hardest to understand the S's. For I's, it's hardest to understand the C's.
Oh, for sure.
This month, we have on offer a virtual EMC and a virtual ECC. The virtual EMC starts on May 13th at 10 a.m. Eastern, and the session's over 2 weeks on Zoom. ECC is one session, May 15th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. Come and learn about the Trinity or communication with DISC. Either way, we got you. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
Okay, so now we've got some good news. You only have to do as much as you have to do. So let us explain. In engineering, there is a concept of tolerance, meaning the total amount a dimension may vary and the difference between the maximum and lower minimum limits. And you know this, you just don't know this. For example, the air conditioning in your house keeps the temperature at 70 degrees plus or minus 2 degrees. And the plus or minus is the tolerance. So if it's 71 or 72, the air conditioning is still good. But if it gets to 73, it's not working properly. So those 71, 72, that's the tolerance. And your air conditioner is thinking, okay, I have to be accurate between 70 and 72. Well, at work, there's a tolerance for your accuracy too. And you only have to do as much as you have to do.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Like the pesky details at work have tolerances in that if you're not in finance, then maybe tolerance for sales numbers is plus or minus 10%. Meaning if your actual sales were $500,000, any number between $450,000 and $1 and $549,999 would be accurate enough. There's room for rounding, I suppose. I was going to say room for error, but there's room for rounding. More likely, you'll have a number like $476,437. And you can just make it $500,000. And it is still accurate by definition while you're in that situation. You don't have to go to the nth degree of detail of every single situation because the situation here just doesn't demand it. Just go as far as you have to go and save your energy, that energy around being precise and accurate for things that require the accuracy.
So your next problem of the problems that we picked out at the beginning to mitigate was unrealistic optimism. And the way to mitigate that is estimate, don't guess. And you'd think that estimation and guessing are the same thing, but they're not. Because what happens is unrealistic optimism means creating goals that can't be achieved. And we know you love the aphorism, optimism is a force multiplier. And it's true. And you go around repeating it because you love it. And at 2 a.m. in the war room on launch day, your energy and optimism is exactly what's needed. So it's a great motto to be living by.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And hi, eyes. Note, this is why when you say guesstimate, the high C's laugh at you. Because one, guesstimate isn't a word. And guesses and estimates are completely different things. It's hurting you when you constantly miss targets or deadlines because you've overestimated what you or others can do. You're adding to your reputation for being unreliable. What's more, it grinds people down. You might be able to slough it off, move on to the next most exciting idea, but other people take the loss personally. They blame themselves for missing deadlines and targets that you set, and they blame you for setting unrealistic deadlines and putting them in that position in the first place. And the more it happens, the more negative feelings build up between you. And these are feelings, again, that you're not even noticing, but are contributing to your inability to have strong relationships with colleagues.
So instead of using Optimism is a force multiplier is your go-to motto. Use this one instead. Under promise and over deliver. Because you get as much, if not more, kudos for under promising and over delivering as you do for setting some outrageous target, whether, you know, because what you do is set an outrageous target at the beginning of a project, get loads of kudos for it, right? And you have no idea whether you can hit it or not. And then the end of the project is a drag because you've missed it. Whereas if you under-promise and over-deliver, you get even more kudos at the end of the project.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. And stop picking a number out of thin air when you're asked to give an estimate. Instead, tell people that you're going to get back to them when you've had some time to make a considered estimate. Start by overestimating how long things will take and how difficult those things are, and then work toward what you want to say as you prove yourself right, or ask someone who's really, really good at estimating to help you. However you got to the number, add a third every time. It is way, way better to have people annoyed that your estimates are suggestive of the fact that you're going to take too long than hounding you because the deadline's passed and you're already sick of the project, so you don't want to be working on it anymore, and it's still not done because of this estimation issue.
Yeah, that would suck. Okay, interrupting. Stop interrupting. And you can stop interrupting, but like talking over people and going off on tangents, you have to notice that you're doing it first. And we said, watch a recorded meeting. You watch it again, you'll see yourself interrupting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost certain that you interrupt in order to go off on a tangent.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't even think eyes think of the times that they speak as being actual interruptions. Again, because eyes are comfortable with more than one person speaking at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why it obscures for eyes the fact that they're interrupting at all, because they think of language conversation is much more fluid than that. But hi, eyes, you interrupt because you're excited, because you want to share an idea, because all your brain cells clang together in your brain and give you the best idea that has ever been come up with by a human being on the planet Earth ever. But think about it. If you have the best idea ever right now, what about that best idea ever you had last week? I guess what I'm saying is, it can't be the best idea ever and that occur to you every single week. In terms of ideas, keep in mind, couldn't somebody else on the team's idea be the best idea ever? And how are you even going to know if you don't give them a chance to tell you what their idea is? How cool would it be to get excited about someone else's idea instead?
And stopping interrupting is hard.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
When we're in conversation, we are not really listening to the sounds of the room and the conversation and everything that's happening. We're listening to an interpretation of the sound in our own heads, because there's so much going on in a room. There's so many noises that we could be hearing that our brain has to filter out a lot of the noise. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to hear the things that we need to hear. So it also filters out the sound of our own voice, and it substitutes the things we think we're saying. So what you hear as what you're saying is what you think you're saying. And when you tune into your own voice, you will be surprised to hear the ums and ahs and so's and likes and all the verbal tics you have and how often you are talking over others.
Mm-hmm. And as hard as it is to tune into your own voice, the tuning into your own voice is not enough to stop you from actually interrupting. All it does is allows you to hear when you do interrupt. And it's going to happen. You're not going to be able to pay attention to the voice inside your head and be so good at this immediately anyway that you can stop yourself from saying things. You're going to say things, and that's okay. When you realize it, stop what you're saying and say, "I'm so sorry, I interrupted. Please finish." Don't just go ahead because you've already interrupted anyway. So, I mean, what does it hurt? And finish your idea. Stop talking I'm so sorry, I've interrupted. Please continue and let the other person have the floor.
And the other styles are not excusing you because they think you're excited. They're not excusing you because, oh, what you interrupted me to say was so cool. It was the best idea ever. It was the best story. What I was going to say was not half as much fun as what you interrupted me to say.
Mm-hmm.
They think you're unprofessional and childish. They think you can't control yourself and you're rude. And what's more, they think you're being rude to them specifically. So that relationship between you and them is being damaged. You're the one person on the team who wants to work with their friends, and you are going around damaging your relationship with your friends by being thoughtless.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think one of the saddest things that I share, Wendy, when we're doing the Effective Communicator Conference with people is when I share with the eyes, and also with the more reserved people, but share with the eyes that they would be baffled by the number of times they are having conversations with a person and are super jazzed. I mean, like, just like crazy excited. Like, this is the best conversation I've ever had in my whole life ever. And the other person to whom they're speaking is just sitting there nodding and smiling and waiting for the first opportunity to leave this conversation. Just thinking to themselves, literally, like, how do I get out of here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I wish there was an opportunity to get a word in edgewise here because I need to like get out of here. Like, I've got a meeting, like I've got stuff, like I really don't want to be having this conversation anymore. And guys, it's natural, right? You're having so much fun. You are having so much fun. You can't even fathom the idea that the other people in the conversation aren't having as much fun as you. But keep in mind, communication is what the listener does. You have to tune into them. So in summary, being a high I is not a strength or a weakness any more than being a high D or an S or a C is a strength or a weakness. All that label means is that we have a natural set of behaviors that may or may not support our effectiveness in any given situation. And we, as human beings, have the gift of being able to change those behaviors anytime we like. And since working on a team is what we all do every day, whether we want to or not, learning to recognize the behaviors that work for and against us will help us learn lessons that will allow us to have better skills and in turn, better relationships. After all, high eyes just want to get all the work out of the way so we can all celebrate with all of our friends. And if that's what it takes to do it, it's worth doing.
Sure. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with the High S.
Bye.